Сейчас мы слово передаем профессору Мири, который вернулся к нам после некоторого отсутствия. Он последний раз был у нас на конференции по сравнительной философии. Рада вашему возвращению.
Janab Aqaye Miri, yanki az shoma azat oli davat mikunam baro iradi sukhanrani mige ki ba'd az moddati bargashtid va yek konferans doshim dar vaqe falsafa-ye tadbiqi. Biz kheli khush omad migim behetun. Befahm.
Мой доклад будет
по-английски, да?
Да.
Хорошо.
Извините. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. The title of my paper is Farabi and the Invention of Post-Secular Social Theory. There is no doubt that Farabi has played a significant role in the history of world philosophy. However, what is not very clear is the future. However, what is not very clear is the nature of Farabi's significance in the context of philosophy, as it seems opinions about his contributions vary dramatically and profoundly. In other words, how should we conceptualize different discourses on Farabi? Is his importance of archaeological nature, is Farabi's significance of historical importance, does he possess any contemporary meaning for post-secular social theories today? In answering these questions, I have come up with a classificatory scheme which may be of use in conceptualizing contradictory streams on Farabi's intellectual legacy. In an introductory manner, I have enumerated three different, but certainly interconnected discourses on Farabi, which are surely important, but they do not occupy similar position within the parameter which I am going to develop in relation to Farabi, in the fashion which has been conceptualized by the contemporary Iranian philosopher, i.e. Professor Reza Davari. When looking at the literature, we can discern three forms of research on Farabi, i.e. Farabi as Al-Farabius, Farabi as Al-Farabi, and Farabi as Farabi, without any Latinized format or any Arabized form, but in an ironic sense which could be used for what I have conceptualized as house mentality versus field mentality. Let me explain my viewpoint in some details so the audience will get a better understanding on where I am heading. In my view, there are three different interpretative strategies on Farabi's legacy, i.e. the archaeological, the historical, and what I call the alternative discourse, which I would explain them in some details respectively. The first one, the archaeological discourse on Al-Farabius. By archaeological discourse on Farabi, I refer to a particular interpretative strategy, which is based on a linear approach to history of ideas that starts in Greece and ends in the modern West. In other words, the importance of Farabi is to play the role of a ring in a long-standing chain of ideas, which should be read in an accumulative frame of analysis that stretches from Hellas to Paris and Oxford or Chicago. Within this archaeological frame of interpretation, Farabi is considered as a significant figure as far as his position in the great chain of Eurocentric historiography of philosophy is concerned. The fundamentals of archaeological discourse is based on the assumption that the West has an unbroken line of progress, which for a short while it rested on a non-Western category, which took care of unfolding of ideas based on the activities of reason. In other words, in the Eurocentric vision of the history of ideas, Farabi was solely essential in the handing down of Aristotle's thought to the Christian West in the Middle Ages. To put it otherwise, the importance of Farabi is conceptualized as much as he contributed to what is assumed to be the Eurocentric paradigm of ideas. In this reading, Farabi is turned into a new medium, which is symbolized by the Latinized form of his name, i.e. Al-Farabius. This is to argue that Farabi has no significance in the world of ideas as such, but one should consider him in relation to another master narrative, which Farabi had played an intermediary role as Al-Farabius. In sum, within this discourse, one should not think of Farabi in contemporary sense, or even attempt to think through his categories and concepts in relation to reality as such, due to the fact that Farabi had a function which he fulfilled in the larger picture of the Western history of ideas. In other words, the function which Farabi had is not of contemporary importance, but it could be studied as one studies archaeological relics and artifacts of the bygone cultures and civilizations. This is to argue one needs to understand the function which Al-Farabius had in the past, as this would assist us in understanding where we stand today in the frame of modernist world of ideas. But it would be a mistake to replace archaeological significance of Al-Farabius with epistemological importance of his ideas in terms of contemporaneity. This distinction is a very pivotal in terms of philosophical reflection, as it has to do with the question of authenticity and inauthenticity, or the matters of possibility and impossibility. The second strategy of reading, which I have called the historical discourse on Al-Farabi. There is another discourse on Farabi, which is first and foremost focused on him in a historical sense, although it is hard to distinguish between the historical and archaeological, as both seem to be concerned with the past rather than the present or future. But it would be wrong to equate both of these readings as similar, because those who are interested in Farabi within the historical discourse do not conceptualize him in relation to the West, as though he is only of importance if he fulfills the intermediary function of handing down the wisdom of the Hellas to the modern Europe. On the contrary, in this reading, Farabi is considered as Al-Farabi, i.e. as a unique philosopher who belongs to a particular civilization with all its complexities and peculiarities, without reducing these civilizational paradoxes to fit a particular Eurocentric vision of history. This is to argue that within this form of interpretation, Al-Farabi is conceptualized as a political philosopher who teaches how to think anew about politics, but his significance for contemporary thought, political, cultural, or social, is more intellectual than practical. Here I am thinking of, for example, Charles Butterworth. This is to argue that although Farabi is conceptualized on his own terms, but the terms which Farabi works through are not practical for the epoch we live in, i.e. in the world of ontological insecurity, risk society, late modernity, liquid modernity, or the disenchanted world of modernity. To put it otherwise, in this reading, the master narrative is modernity, and by modernity one should understand the Eurocentric vision of the world, and by extension it would be a mistake to think of multiple forms of modernities as European vision of reality has transcultural value, if not universal significance. However, it would be a grave mistake to think in the modern context through the categories of Al-Farabi, which belongs to a pre-modern world. In this reading, the concept of pre-modern is not a descriptive category, but it is a normative concept which has epochal distinction within its parameters. But why then bother to engage with Al-Farabi? Well, the answer is that one could see the intellectual brilliance of Western civilizations, but the limit should be always in mind that the brilliance has an expiry date, which if not realized, then one may fall into romantic traps of the so-called the discontents of the Euro-Atlantic world order. The architects of historical interpretative strategy are interested in Al-Farabi in a manner that one may be interested in a brilliant novel such as The Brothers Karamazov. This is to argue that it would be a mistake to expect from a novel a report of reality, as one expects from a scientific essay, thinks about the constitutions of reality in all its complex dimensions. Although these distinctions have become very redundant in the context of post-modern turn, but current approaches toward non-Western categories, Western concepts, or non-Eurocentric paradigms and philosophies have not internalized the post-modern turn yet. And as a consequence, it is bizarre to turn to Al-Farabi to get practical directions or employ him to find practical solutions for serious political problems in the modern and postmodern world. The third strategy of interpretation is what I have called the alternative discourse on Farabi. I have chosen three different styles in describing the contributions of Farabi. In the first move, I have employed the term Al-Farabius, which is attempted to design a particular reading strategy of Farabi, i.e. as an intermediary medium in a linear historiography of philosophy. In the second mood, I chose the Arabic form of Farabi's name, i.e. Al-Farabi, which is meant to signify the intellectual significance of Farabi without having any practical importance in the context of modernity today. Although these two prevailing strategies of interpretations are important, but do not exhaust the potentials which one may be able to find in Farabi's intellectual frame of reference. In other words, what is of interest for me is the contemporary significance or the contemporaneity importance of Farabi as a source of concept formation in overcoming Eurocentric pitfalls of modernity by being able to craft new moods of creating forms of post-Eurocentric possibilities of being in the world. For this end, I have chosen the Persian form of Farabi's name, i.e. Farabi, without any reference to its Arabic or Latin styles, which have been used in archaeological and historical models of conceptualizing philosophical contributions of Farabi. In order to expand the alternative mode of understanding Farabi, I would like to introduce two concepts of house mentality and field mentality. These two concepts have been coined by Malcolm X in describing two models of subjectivity, i.e. submissive mentality or mentality and emancipative mentality. He argues that a house human being is an alienated person, i.e. someone who has lost his own sense of subjectivity and incessantly attempts to identify himself with the master narrative, or dominating mood of being. On the other hand, a field person is someone who masters all his powers to distance from the master narrative and knows that he is not similar to the master, and as long as he defines himself in terms of the master narrative, he shall remain in chain. In other words, the field person has his own subjectivity, and this sense of distance shall provide him with the possibility to emancipate himself from tutelage. If this argument makes sense, then I would like to argue that the first two interpretative strategies would make us to settle with the house approach, while the alternative approach would be a field mentality, namely strategies which would enhance field subjectivity. It is in this context that I think Professor Daveri's contributions on Farabi would come useful, as he does not approach Farabi either in an archaeological or a historical fashion. One of the most important questions in social theory and philosophy is the relation between religion and philosophy, or the locus of religion in relation to modernity. The dominant view is conceptualized as thesis of secularism, which either does not recognize any substantial significance for religion as an intellectual category, or consider a peripheral position for religion as a category, both in terms of philosophy and society. But this is not the fashion which Daveri conceptualizes the philosophical legacy of Farabi. He argues, quote, "One of the most pivotal aspects of Farabi's philosophy is on the relation between religion and philosophy. In my view, Farabi has contemplated seriously on this relation, and one may be able to assume that by doing so, he has occupied a very important place in the history of ideas. When philosophy, in Farabi's view, which is a task for the elites, could be compatible with the religious act, then it should be realized that philosophy is not only about abstract questions, because in Farabi's view, the question of police or the city is intertwined with revelation." End of quote. Daveri, 1982, page 5. In other words, Farabi's concern with philosophy and religion is not only of intellectual significance, but it has practical importance, which is what I think neither the archaeological nor historical approaches could make justice to Farabi's legacy. To put it differently, it seems Daveri's engagement with Farabi has a contemporary dimension, which he summarizes in the following fashion. Quote, "The Eurocentric vision of reality and the twilight of sacred thought and the exile of humanity are approaching their ends, and a new dawn is heralding up on us." End of quote. Daveri, 1982, page 21. Daveri wrote these lines around the beginning of the Iranian Revolution in 1979, which promised a new interpretative strategy toward religion as an intellectual category and a political question. This is to argue Farabi's philosophy is important for reconfiguration of a republic which is premised upon the religious rather than the secular. If this assumption is correct, then reappropriation of Farabi's legacy cannot have only intellectual significance. On the contrary, if we are determined to overcome the Eurocentric vision of reality, then we should turn to Farabi or other non-Eurocentric philosophers for empowering the paradigms of field subjectivity and multiple forms of modernities, which are not in enslaved positions toward Eurocentrism. In other words, in the age of republicity of religion, in the public square, and in the context of a religious republic, Farabi could be deeply instrumental in reconfiguration of the police in a critical fashion, as, quote, Farabi was of the opinion that the head of the police should be a philosopher who obtains his knowledge from the source of revelation. As a matter of fact, the head of Farabi's good city is Prophet, and this means that authentic religion is what philosophy truly is. End of quote. In other words, in the context of religious republic, Farabi's concerns cannot be treated either in archaeological or historical fashions, as the question of governmentality is a contemporary problem which requires practical solutions. Needless to argue that any feasible praxis should be premised upon a clear theoretical vision of the order of things, be ethical, political, social, or religious. These realms are differentiated in modern philosophy, as the great chains of being has been relegated to the periphery. But Farabi conceptualizes them in a hierarchical fashion, and as such, he presents a different after tomorrow, rather than a bygone yesterday. Thank you.
So, I'm sure that this very interesting, thought-provoking paper will raise the questions. Простите. Значит, я уверена, что этот интересный и такой провоцирующий размышление доклад должен вызвать вопрос. Пожалуйста.
Thank you very much, Professor Miri, for your talk, which I find not only provocative, but also very rich. And you know, as I listened to it, I found that, strangely enough, but also maybe not strangely, rather on good reason, it coincided with some of my ideas, because 2 years or 3 years ago at a similar conference, I gave a talk about three ways of approaching the legacy, or the what is called the non-Western philosophers, and what you call the archaeological approach. I call it universalistic or Eurocentric, and what you call the historical, it is a civilization-based or civilization-biased or based on civilization approach. And I find no problem with sympathizing with those, with what you told about this. Now, the third one, the alternative discourse, we should find an alternative to those two, which do not do justice to Al-Farabi or to any other Islamic thinker. Or here, I find it not so easy for myself to agree with what you said, because not everything maybe is clear to me. So I would like to clarify some points. So just a few questions. You spoke about the multiple forms of modernity and this alternative discourse as a way to fitting Al-Farabi into those multiple forms of modernity and escaping both archaeological and historical approaches, which means adopting what you call the field mentality, right? Instead of the house mentality. But don't you think that the multiple forms of modernity itself is a master narrative? Why do you think that referring to multiple forms of modernity or liquid modernity or the like, you escape the master narrative? I think that this is the master narrative which was invented and is developed and elaborated by the Western thinkers. So why is it an escape? I don't think so. Another question, it has to do with the symbols. So we want to do away with Farabius, with this archaeological approach, and with Al-Farabi, which refers to the Arabicized civilizational approach. But why do you think that Persian-centered Farabi is intercultural? Does it not happen that you simply abandon the Latin, the Platon-centered or Eurocentric view and Arab-centric view for Persian-centric view? Thank you.
That's a good question. But you know, first about what you say, that it seems that we have some kind of similarity, so I think it's a good thing, because we all are living in the Euro-Asian continent, so I think it should be that we have some commonalities. But about what? Why do I think multiple forms of modernities are actually another form of house mentality? I think we should put things a little bit in the context. We cannot go back to the cave. I am not going to propose that we should actually turn the clock back to, for example, 18th century and try to live in the cave. Why? Because we have around us in Iran, we have on the eastern side and the southwestern side, we have people who are calling themselves like jihadis, salafis, this, that, and they want to go back. We don't want to go back. What we are trying to say, though, because civilization always are in terms of exchanging. Of course, there are certain things in modernity or from West, from Russia, from anywhere today, from China, are coming and going. So we have to accept, we have to receive. We never had a clear, for example, ideal type of Iranian or, I don't know, Islamic, for example, culture. When you look at the Islamic culture itself, it's full of actually different sources of knowledge have contributed to what we call today, for example, Islamic civilization. This first thing, I don't want to go back to the cave. So we want to go to the future. And if you look at the principles of even the Shi'i, for example, philosophy, never looks back. Always says in the future, there are certain things that should be overcome, for example. The second thing, what I said about forms of, for example, reading Farabi, Al-Farabi, I didn't mean we have to go look, for example, Persian center. I said when I look at the literature, it seems there are two or three, maybe tomorrow you can find even more forms of reading the text. Another thought, I am not proposing, or I'm not endorsing Persian center, for example, civilization against Arab center. No, this is not what I mean. I meant the text. It seems, for example, Charles Butterworth, I was in this, you know, Charles Butterworth, he was the student of Mohsen Mahdi, and they were actually, somehow they were influenced by Levi Strauss, I think, reading of philosophy. So, when I asked him, is it possible to talk about social theory of Farabi? He told me, Farabi doesn't have anything to do with social theory. Farabi is very interesting in the past. We should not think about Farabi today, because what Farabi said, it doesn't have anything to do with how should we order, or for example, our political structures today, or what should be the relation between society, culture, or for example, politics. Farabi doesn't talk about this thing. Then I said, okay, why should we read Farabi? What's the use? Very important intellectual. It's like a hobby, mental hobby. But for me, Farabi, it doesn't have this kind of significance. Of course, you should. You cannot exclude, for example, these kind of reading. Why? Because first you have to understand the text. You have to go and learn the Arabic. You have, for example, look at what the classical, for example, interpreter have told. But what alternative position is actually supporting or is trying to achieve is, what is the significance of this kind of reading or this kind of vision for our today's life? Or could these kind of, for example, thinkers who didn't experience Western modernity could give us some kind of concept to think outside or without these kinds of what we call it Eurocentric visions? That was what I did.
Есть еще вопросы? Есть вопросы еще? Можно я тогда тоже дать один вопрос? Да. We have some 5 minutes more, so...
Yes, please.
I think that why I said it's so provoking, it doesn't mean it's not interesting, because so provoking means that it's full of insights or ideas which will provoke in others the interest and thought. So your paper is like that. What interests me in that paper is that you touch the very important problem of post-secular state. And this is a problem not only for Iran or Muslim countries, it's all over the world, and in the Western world in particular, and in Russia too. And we know in Russia, and we know in the West, in Italy, for example, and looking for the discussion which was between the Pope and Habermas, we see that everywhere the same. So this is a search for the concept or the solution of the concept of post-secular state. So going in this direction, it looks there is a kind of the process of making intercultural philosophy. I don't know if you thought about that. When we speak about intercultural philosophy, I think Al-Farabi is one of the figures who could be thought-provoking and could be accepted his ideas and the ideas for those who in post-secular society think about the society where religion goes together with secular state and give a chance to have a free but free person, but it's the same the person which a particular morals, ethics, and so on. So my question is that, is there anybody, you know, anybody from the field of intercultural philosophy who already referred to Al-Farabi, or it is unknown to them?
As far as I know, it is Professor Sayyid Farid Al-Attas.
Al-Attas, yeah, I know, from Malaysia.
Father,
yeah. Yeah,
and his father, Sayyid Hussein Al-Attas.
Yeah.
They have actually referred to Farabi and Abu Rayhan, Biruni, and even Ibn Khaldun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exactly well, about mm-hmm. this question. Mm-hmm. But if they have developed it in their social theory, so far, I haven't.
No, because I thought it will be useful for the Westerners to look into that. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.